Wondering how to navigate local, city, state, or the federal government in order to grow your business, secure funding for your nonprofit, or advance your organization's agenda? Welcome to Lobbying Insider, a podcast that brings listeners to the intersection of business and government to provide a rare perspective on how things actually get done. We will dive into some pressing current issues, provide keen observations from the past, and keep an ever-watchful eye on what's coming next. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Glad to have you with us. We built
this city. This is really the first time that any administration has focused on the zoning resolution.
Well, you know, to Lou's point, they say build it and they will come. And the problem is right now in this town, we can't build it.
And we are joined by two members of our esteemed team here at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Howard Weiss, good to be with you.
Hi, Zach. Good to be with you today.
Good to have you. And Lou Coletti.
Hi, Zach.
Welcome back. Good to see you again, Lou.
Always a pleasure.
All right, we're going to talk today about the City of Yes. Now, this is a New York City initiative, and it breaks down into three components. It's partially the environment, trying to get to carbon neutrality. It also has to do with economic development and with housing. Now, already there have been some hearings. The City Council is considering this already. Late last year, the City Council passed the City of Yes for carbon neutrality, so that is moving in the right direction. But they're hoping to have this all wrapped up by May. And Howard, one of the reasons we wanted you to talk about this in some details, because you're an expert on zoning in particular. And I think for the average layperson, that can be a little complicated, a little bit hard to digest and out of reach. But can you maybe just explain how these zoning changes would be significant and how they would improve life in our city?
Well, Zach, as you mentioned, overall, the City of Yes addresses a broad cloth approach to both the city's carbon footprint, our economic life, and housing. And zoning generally controls how we live, work, and play. What's significant about City of Yes is it's the first time since 1961 that a city administration has taken a comprehensive approach to revamping our zoning to meet what are our socioeconomic needs, and in particular, the focus on economic development and housing.
And 1961, I mean, just to give people a sense of how long ago that was. I mean, someone was making the joke that it governs where taxidermy and telegraph repair shops can be located in parts of the city, but doesn't deal at all with, you know, cell phones, modern technology, AI, for example. So there really is a need, I think, to modernize. Is it fair to say that?
Yes, particularly because we have to look at our zoning and the way it controls the use and development of land with reference to what our needs are, looking at 2024 and beyond. And the city zoning looked at the world as it was in 61. And in fact, the origins of zoning go back to 1916. And the city zoning ordinance started out 20 pages and evolved today to 900 pages in three massive volumes. And yet today's zoning is really a product of, over the last 45 years, applications by individual property owners to enhance the development potential of their properties, or the city that looked at targeted issues and then initiated either community-based zoning changes or citywide addressed to specific issues. But this is the first time since 61 that an administration has taken a broad look and done a massive revamping of the zoning to meet a broad spectrum of needs. Most importantly, I think, and most significantly, what is yet to come, which is the City of Yes for Housing opportunity. We expect next week for the administration to announce the details, and then it's going to go into public review process this spring, and then by the end of this year, if all meets the mayor's expectations, it would be approved.
And what about that, Lou? I mean, obviously, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of people with skin in this game. How do you get everybody to a consensus on something like that? Obviously, you have representation in the council. That's part of the elected government. They're going to take into consideration everything and all these concerns people might have. But, you know, there's a lot here to be considered with housing, with individuals who are worried about employment.
Well, I think Howard brought up a very important point. in terms of this is really the first time that any administration has focused on the zoning resolution. I'm old enough to remember when Mike Bloomberg first ran for office, and he walked into a meeting I was at with the zoning book and threw it on the floor and said, this is why we can't build in New York City.
Because of the regulation.
Because of the regulations. It was onerous. And now, under the city for yes, we're starting to get Dan Gorodnick has done a wonderful job as city planning commissioner in moving us to this point where we're actually going to be able to cut through that. And the city has a great need for it. I mean, both economically and socially. I mean, economically, people forget that construction and real estate comprise 20% of the city's GDP and 10% of the jobs and 5% of the wages. New York City has lost 200,000 residents.
This was post-pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years because of the lack of housing. Can't afford it, can't find it. It employs the new workforce. 70% of the workers who build these new housing units are in the construction industry are people of color and women. So it has enormous implications for the future economic development both of the city, but also the social development of the city. And that's why this initiative is so exciting. Where are we going to be? We're going to know the answer to that in a couple of days, I hope, when the legislature really comes forth with their housing plan. You can change all the rules and regulations, but if you don't get some of the tax incentive programs that they're talking about in Albany, then we'll have an easier process, but we still won't have the housing that we need.
Right. They're just not building the housing stock, I think, is part of the problem. But what would you say has changed from those days of Bloomberg versus the ability now with someone like Mayor Adams in charge to actually get something like this done? I mean, it's a huge comprehensive push here.
I think the cost of construction has continued to escalate in the city. The cost of land, the cost of actual construction. You've seen a shift in the marketplace. It's why this town used to be very pro-union. When you look at the private sector, especially in housing, they've lost market share. It's because of the cost. It's because of the cost of insurance. I came across a stat the other day that was astounding to me, that the average cost to insure an affordable apartment is $1,770 out of the rent that they're paying. That's astronomical.
Yeah.
Politically, we're never going to change the scaffolding law. So the cost structure, there's not a lot of wiggle room in trying to reducing costs, which is going to encourage developers without those incentives for them to build housing.
You mentioned the scaffolding law. Just give us a brief primer on that, on what the issue is there.
The scaffolding law, New York is the only state in the United States that has this law. And what it means is that the owner and the contractor have 100% liability. If a worker was on a ladder and jumped off, all the jury decides is how much money does that person get, not what was their personal responsibility. We're the only state in the entire country that has it. And the combination of the trial attorneys and the building trade unions have provided an impenetrable political force to get any change to that.
Yeah, I do hear periodically they talk about trying to reform that in Albany, and it doesn't really go anywhere.
No, I spent too many years in my career spending a lot of money and not being successful.
Right. yes, no, and I just know statistically, I mean, look, 19%, they say, office vacancy rate, about 17,000 vacant storefronts. So it does sound like, particularly, Howard, coming out of something like the pandemic, there is a need for change and to modernize some of these, you know, businesses in terms of what is able to operate and where.
Well, you know, to Lou's point, they say build it and they will come. And the problem is right now in this town, we can't build it.
Yeah.
I think through zoning, this administration is trying to create a broader platform to make it more feasible. But without the state acting with respect to necessary tax incentives and other entitlements, it's not going to be possible. For example, under the new City of Yes for Housing Opportunity, we're expecting that the administration is going to propose a universal affordability preference, which is something very different than presently exists in terms of the production of affordable housing. Across a broad swath of the city, it will allow developers the opportunity to obtain a 20% bonus in terms of the housing that they can develop in exchange for providing affordable housing. But in order for developers to provide the affordable housing, we have to seriously look at the state level on a replacement program for the old 421A that makes it financially feasible to support that kind of development.
421A is a tax incentive that some form or another has been on the books for a better part of 40 or 50 years, right? And then a couple of years ago, it expired in Albany. They did not renew it, and there has been a real lack of initiative in terms of building housing. Now, critics had been saying for a very long time that 421A favored developers and it was too generous. The problem is, without it at all, there is no requirement to build affordable units. So what you had is you have an instance where a developer would build a luxury high-rise but set aside certain units that were affordable. Again, not a perfect formula. However, without it, you're not getting, to Lou's point, any of this new affordable housing at all.
And therein lies the problem. So that, for example, this administration aspires through the City of Yes for Housing Opportunity to see produced over the next 15 years 100,000 units of housing. However, unless it's made financially feasible, it can't happen. You know, the government is poised to fund social services, as it must, to fund police services, fire services, sanitation services, as it must. The government also has to focus on how does it support the production of housing, as it must. If, in fact, the state can come together with its municipalities and develop a rational program to provide the opportunity for the subsidy for the affordable housing that the city zoning now will make possible, then we'll be able to build it, and they will come. We will then be able to see a resurgence in terms of people coming back to New York across a broad spectrum of social and economic class, which is really the lifeblood of this town.
And that's been part of it, right, is that the loss of population. I mean, you've seen it not only in New York City, but you've seen it at the state level as well. And I do think a lot of it comes down to housing. But maybe if there's more economic opportunity, I mean, because I think in this case, we're also talking about new kinds of businesses, right, the room for innovation. For example, they even mentioned updating the cabaret laws. You know, these have been on the books for you know, decades. I remember during Giuliani era, they talked about enforcing the cabaret laws, which was preventing, you know, young people from dancing in bars. They literally prevent movement in bars and certain restaurants. And they're antiquated to some degree, but I think the goal is now to overturn them so you can innovate. You can have different kinds of businesses. You can have arts in certain storefronts where you previously could not.
One of the things that City of Yes for Economic Opportunity strives to accomplish is to increase the opportunity for home occupation. In the post-pandemic world, in a world where a lot of us, in fact, are based from home as we work, either full-time or part-time, the City of Yes will expand the types of businesses that one can undertake in your home up to 1,000 square feet as long as the business is being conducted by a resident. Very important, very critical. It generated some level of controversy as people in local communities were concerned as to how they would be impacted, but the City Planning Commission effectuated some restrictions that both would foster more home occupation while balancing that with the concerns for how that with impact on neighbors. So it's that kind of initiative, it's that kind of perspective that's important. As you mentioned, the antiquated cabaret laws.
Right.
The city also is looking to foster greater retail within local neighborhoods. You're bringing back the old mom and pop retail stores, allowing, for example, stores that are have been vacant for a number of years, which under zoning could not be reestablished. The new City of Yes would allow those retail to come back into local communities.
And it does seem like there was at least the trend that we were seeing, certainly prior to the pandemic, and I think in some respects it's maybe been, you know, kind of accelerated, is that you were seeing mom-and-pop shops go away in favor of landlords who were seeking higher rents. So what they wind up doing is renting to big-box stores. And even some of the big-box stores, especially now that you're having kind of a rash of retail theft, are now rethinking that. So then you have a lot of these vacant storefronts, which is not good for anybody.
Yeah, and I think, Zach, the point you just made and Howard made is that is some of the debate that's going on at the city council about the proposals right now. Manufacturing sites. Well, neighbors want clean manufacturing. They want to bring back the mom-and-pop stores. They want there are, in some of these proposals, the ability for healthcare facilities, which we see propping up all over the city. The hospitals and now want to be able to open life science labs, okay, which will improve the quality of life for the neighborhood. But that's all encompassed in what we're talking about here, which is the most significant set of changes that I think we've seen in our lifetimes in terms of a City of Yes that's really going to get us back going. I mean, it's 421A. It's also being able to have the ability to take all of this commercial space that's on the market now and being able to convert it to residential space. I mean, in today's newspaper, with three iconic buildings that the developers are saying, I'm at 25-30% tenancy, 845 3rd Avenue, 750 3rd Avenue.
Marquee buildings,
111 yeah. Wall Street,
right.
With no hopes of ever filling them to any significant level on the commercial side, saying, I'd like to be able to convert that to residential. Well, if we don't get these zoning changes, they're not going to be able to do it.
And because of what is happening, you do think there's a recognized need here, but I mean, is that going to do it? Like, give me the vision, if you could, in terms of what kind of new businesses we're looking at. They mentioned, for example, microbreweries, things that perhaps you couldn't have previously had in certain neighborhoods. Is this going to open the door for that kind of innovation?
It will. It will allow in the city's commercial corridors, commercial uses that previously weren't permitted in what are sites that are close to the home, if you will, adjacent to residential areas. And again, even within residential areas, bringing back the notion of the corner grocery store, which zoning doesn't permit. So on the one hand, it's looking at a larger scale at economic development, but it's looking at a micro scale also in terms of reinforcing the concept of walkable neighborhoods,
right,
where you can live and you can work and you can play. One of the things that City of Yes will do away with the antiquated regulations that prohibit in proximity to residential areas amusement arcades,
yeah,
and other types of amusement facilities that really do belong as part of neighborhoods.
Yeah, and you really do have that segregation to some degree, I feel like, in the city now, which isn't necessarily beneficial, which is, you know, you have kind of a business zone. There's parts of Midtown that are not very populated with residents. You have residential neighborhoods where people generally commute out of in order to go to work. I mean, is the idea to take some of this unused commercial space and make it more of an area where people want to be, a destination that's not just during work hours?
And it's not only a destination in the city's core, not only in Manhattan,
yeah,
but looking to the other boroughs, looking across the broad swath of the city and reinforcing walkable neighborhoods. Neighborhoods where people can live, work, and play.
Is there too much of an emphasis, Lou, you think, on Manhattan development? I mean, has there been sort of, you almost think when people start to talk about development and you know, something like office conversion, that there is a very Manhattan-centric focus?
Well, you know, it's the zoning resolution and the zoning requirements should be a livable, breathing document that can adjust to the economic times. Years ago, the answer to your question is absolutely yes.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to locate their businesses. Everybody wanted to be in Manhattan. So there were changes made that enticed those kinds of efforts to do whatever you needed to do to build a big building, and we had major corporations there.
And that was where the foot traffic was,
and that's
right?
Where if the foot traffic was. Yeah. Now the world is in a different place. The world is in a different place as a result of COVID, as a result of the job base, and the crisis that we have in housing. I mean, when you start looking at the numbers, it's incredible. You shake your head. 200,000 people moved out of New York because they couldn't find adequate housing, or they couldn't afford the housing. That has a longer-term implication for the city, again, economically and socially. So you've got to have a living, breathing document that doesn't put the owners through the hoops and is able to adjust to the general economic trends of the city.
Now, one of the objections I heard, there was a city council hearing, was concerns about certain neighborhoods where you have warehouses, for example, Amazon, and they're going to be delivering packages. And, you know, they're concerned about the truck traffic, which is an environmental hazard, and sort of sticking these areas in places like Hunts Point or Staten Island. So how do you address those concerns?
Well, I think the term they were using is they're looking to move away from those types of facilities and into what they call clean manufacturing.
Okay.
I don't know how you do that, given in today's world, those companies play a very vital role in the quality of life of New Yorkers.
People like their packages.
Yeah, you like your packages, you know?
Right.
You're not going to go downtown anymore and buy shirts or do anything else. So, again, I think it's a series of compromises, but what makes sense for everybody?
But it's interesting, Lou and Zach, to that point. If you go and look at the City of Yes for carbon neutrality, mm-hmm. one of the things that it's focused on is encouraging micro-mobility. And when you look at Amazon and other enterprises like Amazon, in fact, what they're tending to now is using micro-mobility, electrified bicycles.
Yeah,
and some
scooters. And
cargo bicycles.
Yeah.
So you'll have a bike with, in fact, a little cargo compartment attached to it. And so rather than bringing trucks wholesale into communities, they'll have an area where a truck would park itself, and then they'll offload onto these bikes the micro-mobility. And the cities, through the City of Yes for Carbon Neutrality, has sought to encourage opportunities for that kind of use, as well as, in fact, EV stations, recognizing that it's important to encourage the use of EVs, electric vehicles, in place of the gas guzzlers, and, again, to reduce the carbon footprint. So it all does fit and meld together in terms of how City of Yes, with respect to whether it's the carbon footprint, whether it's housing or economic development, it's been a comprehensive attempt by this administration to address all of that and bring us into the 21st and 22nd century.
Well, and that's really interesting because I remember a few years ago when they passed the kind of micro-mobility law, which was allowing some of these e-bikes and really encouraging micro-mobility on the city streets. You know, there was a lot of concern from people about there's too much going on. You can't cross the sidewalk. There's no regulation. It's a little dangerous. It's a little dicey. And I think those concerns are warranted to some degree. But to hear what you're saying, Howard, that's a really good use of that new law in the sense that you recognize how to utilize that to cut down on the carbon footprint of gas guzzling, diesel guzzling trucks, which are everywhere because pretty much all the goods and services we get around here come here on a truck.
And I can tell you that this administration is focused, as we look to increased use of micromobility, to the safety concerns, whether it's among pedestrians, the operators of motor vehicles, or with respect to even the storage of e-batteries and what we've seen occur. So, again, it's a comprehensive approach. There are a lot of buckets that have to be filled, but zoning is underlying all of that because if it's, in a sense, the system through which the lifeblood of the city flows. And it's interesting that in this administration, there's been very quickly this broad approach to dealing with all of these issues.
And it is forward thinking. You do think there is a broader sort of eyes on the prize in terms of where this is all going?
Without a doubt.
Okay. Okay. And it makes for a more livable city.
Yes.
Okay. How far away are you think are we from seeing this? I know you mentioned briefly the timeline, but just, not in terms of the nuts and bolts. Obviously, I know they're trying to do this by the end, but in terms of when you think we might actually start to see some of these changes where we work and live.
Some of these changes can be immediate. So that, for example, with the passage of the City of Yes for carbon neutrality, we are able presently for property owners to now embark on retrofitting their buildings to meet what is the building code's requirements with respect to energy efficiency. In fact, although the city's construction code was updated to mandate that sort of initiative, the zoning didn't facilitate it. So with the City of Yes for carbon neutrality, now the zoning makes possible the retrofitting of buildings so that owners can comply with the code in terms of making their buildings more efficient and sustainable. And I think that's true with respect to City of Yes for economic opportunity. Once the council were to approve it, then property owners and others and businesses can embark upon what they need to do to, in fact, take full advantage of the vision that I think is expressed through that initiative.
So sooner rather than later, you'd say.
Yeah, but I think part of the mayor's City of Yes has been more reasonable in getting to those kind of points. When those rules were passed initially, they had very short time frames in terms of what an owner was expected to do to upgrade those systems. It was unrealistic. And so I think what this administration has done is saying the goal is the right goal. We need to give owners a couple more years to do this because, again, if you're going to increase the cost of that, an owner is going to say, you know what, you take my building.
Yeah.
I can't afford it. It's just too much.
Right.
And that's, again, we just came through COVID. Let's not overlook the impact of that on the development world and the housing world and all of the cost implications that we're talking about. That's part of it, and that's why this is an evolving process. And I think over time, when you get these changes through, and I'm a lot more confident that the council will move forward on these changes to the zoning, then I still wonder about what are we going to end up with housing that comes out of the state. But you're setting a structure and you're setting a base platform for growth.
You know, and I think Lou is absolutely right with respect to City of Yes for housing. The future is a lot more uncertain because much of what's going to be needed to, in fact, realize the Adams administration's aspirations for producing housing and affordable housing is dependent on what the state does.
And that is always the case, that New York City always has grand ideas, and then they realize they are dependent on Albany for just about everything. All right, that is time for us. We are going to wrap up. Howard and Lou, thank you so much for being with us. It's really interesting.
Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, Zach.
The Lobbying Insider is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York's premier middle market law firm, practicing in over 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and, of course, government relations. The Lobbying Insider is produced by Joe Benti, and our sound recording engineer is Devante Addison. Publicity by Jody Fisher PR with Beth Ann Mayer at Lemon Seed Creative Managing Social Media. Our podcast platform manager is Monica Thomas. I'm Zach Fink, host of the podcast, and if you'd like to help us spread the word about our show, please share it with colleagues and friends, and be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice. It can be found on Apple, Audible, Google, iHeart, Podbean, and Spotify platforms. Thanks for joining us.